We were in the middle of discussing Shalom Bayit. Midot Arveva Shalom. Arve Midot Ivne Adam Vinyan Zeh Shalom. There are a lot of different tendencies, traits that people have regarding peace. Yesh Mishu Oseh Machloktim Hakol. There are people who their tendency is to argue with everyone. They're argumentative. Chovim lo v'chokim. People are close to him. People are distant. There are people who that's what they do. They fight with people. Enech Amidah Meguna Mizo. There's nothing worse than this trait. Yesh Mishu Shalom Lo Im Hakol. There are people who are at peace with everyone. Those that are close and distant. You have no better trait than this. Between these two extremes, there are two other kinds of traits. There are people who are at peace with those that are distant from them, but not those that are close to them. People always say that. You're lucky your in-laws, my parents are in the United States. So they tell my wife, sure, you get along with them. They're in another continent. That's not Chochmah, right? I would also get along so on another continent. So that's the truth is that there are people who could only get along with people who are distant from them. But they can't make peace with those that are close to them. And the people in the house are included in this. This is also a bad trait. Aval mishu shalom im hakrovim. But someone who can make peace with those that are his inner circle, people are in his home, but he hasn't yet learned how to make peace with those that are distant from him. This is the first step in attaining peace, being able to make peace first with your inner circle, be able to make peace with your house.
Who says this?
Rabbi Kitov. Ameir panav lechokim. The person who could show a nice countenance, be nice to people who are distant from him, adayin lo nivdak b'midat ha-shalom. He was never tested, really, with the trait of peace. That's not real peace. Efshar odef kavodu. Maybe he's just looking for honor. Shemvakesh lo tiferet min ha-adam. He wants people to honor him, so he makes peace with people who are distant from him. Efshar yitzar ha-machloket manigo. Ela mitoch she'asakav ma'achokim mu'atim. Could be that he loves to have arguments, but people are distant from him, so he has very little to do with them. So there he could contain himself, and therefore with them he could be nice, so they should honor him. But when he comes home, he spills out his anger. So a person is first tested in his home. My father said once that a lot of the people in peace now, and these organizations for peace, my father said, how many of them are divorced more than once? They couldn't make peace in their own home. These are people that they couldn't build a normal home. So who are they to come and say how the whole country should run its way of peace? When can a person be tested whether he has the trait for peace? He is tested in the home. If you recall one of our first classes, if there's anyone left who was there, we mentioned that all around the world, the person is measured outside his home. That this was said in the eulogy for the Chafetz Chaim. Everyone knows that George Washington was a marvelous general. No one knows that he was a miserable adulterer. They don't know that because no one cares about a person's personal life. People speak about what their accomplishments were outside the home and ignore what they were inside the home. And in Judaism we say we measure a person first by what is he inside the home. If he's not a good person in the home, then everything outside the home we don't give value to. The value is given outside the home after a person has had that preliminary test of being able to maintain a good, peaceful home. And Rav Kitov over here is stressing that with the midah of peace. If a person can swallow his anger when he's with his closest relatives, so you see that the will of peace, that's what's guiding him. Now think about it. No one can get under your skin like a brother, a sister, a parent, someone who's really close. The fact that you could be at peace over here, that doesn't prove much. When girls call me up to check out guys here at the Machon, so I always tell them, I say, I'll tell you a lot of good things about him, but before I begin, I have to tell you, I don't know the guys. I have to be honest with you. There were guys here who did all kinds of miserable things to their roommates, which I only found out about a long time later. And in my class, there were the sweetest guys in the world. So just because a guy is very, very nice over here, that's what Rav Kito is saying. There's a certain distance. You come here for an hour and a half. It's very easy to maintain the facade that we all want to maintain. The question is, how's a person with his roommate? How's a person in the home? I don't know that. So after I give that introduction, then I say as much positive things as I could. But I have to be honest with the girl. I can't know you guys well. I'm not your roommate. Your roommates know you a little bit better. Your family knows you even better. So Rav Kitov is saying the biggest test is in the home. Ve'im timtzi lomar lama ino mevakesh shalom im hakol. And if you'll say, what good is it a person who has peace at home if he's not seeking peace with everyone, even those who are distant from him? So we say, mipnei she'adayin eino shalem b'mida zo. Means he hasn't fulfilled, he hasn't finished attaining this trait. V'ulam chazaka lishze. But you could be sure that this person, she'mishtadel aleh, if he works at it, yirev ha'bracha v'day. He will certainly see blessing in it. Because the first fundamental peace a person has to have is in his home. A person has to have peace at home, and that's not easy to attain. Einot tzarich ela she'ida she'akol kovav u'bishlumam gam lo shalom. Person, in order to attain peace at home, has to recognize that they are close to him. The Torah calls a wife she'er, she'er like a piece of his flesh, an extension of him. And if a person recognizes that when it's going to be peaceful to her, when it's going to be good for her, it's going to be good for me, then a person is going to seek what's good for her as much as he does for himself. Now that's a level a person has to aspire to and attain. It's attainable by everyone. What's interesting, one of the things I was fascinated by, I noticed it when I came to Israel more than in the United States. I was guessed by simple people. People who didn't know much beyond how to read a siddur. They really didn't know almost anything. They knew the parsha like what they learned in Gan. That was about it. And you saw the beautiful homes that they established. You saw the beautiful relationships they established. One of the things that we have to know is that on the one hand, we're building our knowledge base and our approach and our attitude to building a good home in this class. But you don't have to have this class in order to build a good home. Every person can and should build a good home. And when a person is attuned and wants to do good and doesn't give up that want to do good, even though it's difficult, then ultimately a person will build a good home. And this is something that's attainable by everyone. You don't have to be a big rabbi to have this. Everyone could and should attain this. Yeah, Ari, I'm with you. You want something? No?
Sorry, I just have to move my hands.
Oh, no problem. Now, Rav Kitov stressed that the first root for peace is the ability to keep our mouths shut, to swallow things. And this is true throughout married life, but like every new thing, the beginning is the hardest. The first years are when a person has to form good habits and get used to it. And slowly a person learns how to do it and it becomes second nature. And once a person gets accustomed to it, so then as time goes on, it gets easier and easier. Rabbi Wein always used to tell us, form good habits. A person should get into good habits. That way it's a second nature. I always say that when a person is dating, he should look for a family where he likes the things he sees in the girl's home. That's a big plus. Because all of us work to move forward in life. But when the chips fall and there are extenuating circumstances, if we don't contain ourselves, what we fall back on most often is the home we saw at home. And we tend to replay scenarios we saw at home. So sometimes we replay them well, and what we saw at home is good. And sometimes we replay them well, and what we saw at home was negative. And we have to be cognizant of that. They say, take a good look at your mother-in-law because that's going to be your wife in 20 years. that's what they say. How true it is, I don't know. Not yet married 20 years. I don't know if my home is exemplary of everything that we learn. Will I tell you? Probably not. I try not to mix my home with the class. But there's a lot of truth to that. There's a lot of truth that you'll notice about yourself. Without noticing it, you replay those scenarios. And that's why it's important, if you can, to find a girl from a good home. And it's important to get into good habits in the beginning. And the more you strengthen good habits, so then that's what you fall back on also. You'll notice that most couples repeat the same arguments, repeat the same issues, the same things that come up. I told you 1,000 times. Well, he told me 1,000 times. Why tell me 1,001? Right? His answer is the same and her answer is the same. If you ever listen to couples, you'll see that their arguments are very repetitive. Sometimes they take on a different encasing, but they're almost always repetitive. And it's good to get into good habits. Good habits of how to argue, which we will discuss, and good habits of how to have peace, which step number one is being quiet, absorbing. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I was thinking about it. Whose fault is it? Like, if something is not working, you should try to look at yourself first, or how to do this? If there's really serious conflict which is repeating over years and years, what can you do?
That's a general question, but first thing is a person should look at himself. And the second thing is the couple should find time to discuss it. And for that you should refer to our class, maybe we'll repeat it, about how you bring up issues to discuss. You have to find a time when it's calm, a scenario when you're both well rested, time when you could both talk and you're close, time when you could bring up the issue in a manner that you're not throwing blame, but rather discussing. Look, we see that X, Y, and Z is happening, is recurring, and what do you say we do about it? You have to have suggestions, you have to prepare, you have to think how to present it in a way that's not threatening and not throwing blame. And you have to be prepared with solutions yourself. And this is a point where usually I encourage couples not to come to counsel. Even though I spend many evenings talking to guys and couples, and I feel like if a couple could work something out themselves, then every issue that a couple resolves together gives them strength. It strengthens the bond between them. Sometimes it helps to bounce something off someone else, because sometimes we can't see how silly we are ourselves. It's very difficult for us to recognize our own faults. So as much as we analyze it, sometimes we'll analyze it, but we're going through the same rut, thinking this along the same lines, coming to the same conclusions that are wrong. I can tell you an example. There was a guy who was dating a girl, and it was going well. And he thought he was going to marry her. It was going really, really well. But there was this one issue. He liked to smoke. And she asked him, please don't smoke. It gives me a headache. So he says, I will not have a girl tell me I won't smoke. So he shows up to the date, and he lights a cigarette. So she opens the window, and she laughs. And this happens time and again. And at one point she tells him, I told you it bothers me. Why do you keep doing this? And this was like the straw that broke the camel's back. They broke up. He says, I will not marry a girl and she'll tell me I won't smoke. So he goes to a friend of his and he tells him, could you imagine the nerve of this girl? Can you imagine I'm coming to a date and she tells me I won't smoke? This goes back 30 years. This is a story that's over 30 years old. But I heard it from a couple themselves. So his friend tells him, and what? Says, and I will smoke. Wasn't it? She tells me I won't smoke. She says that if we get married, she won't let me smoke in the house. I'm not willing to have such a thing. So he tells him, are you nuts? Are you crazy? You met the girl that everything works with, and because you want to smoke for a cigarette, you're going to give up on this girl? I have to tell you, I want to have respect to you, but now I think you're absolutely crazy. So no one else could tell the guy this. But his friend told him this. And after his friend told him that, they got married. They're married to this day. I know the couple. So sometimes a person can't see things on his own. This man was convinced that what he wants is the most reasonable thing in the world. And she's being totally unreasonable. And he was so convinced, he wasn't embarrassed to tell it to his friend. And thank God he had a good friend who told him, you're being ridiculous. This is where, even though ordinarily I encourage not to take matters of the house outside the house, sometimes if you're saying it's something that's recurring over years, sometimes it does help to talk to someone, but you always have to weigh if maybe the couple should agree. It's always a double-edged sword, because once you said a little bit, so you've broken a certain trust between you and your wife. On the other hand, this is where it's good to talk to a rabbi. I can tell you that my wife knows nothing about what goes on by any of the guys here. Nothing. She doesn't know who's a ger or who's about. She only knows from what you guys say. From me, she doesn't hear anything. Because I feel like if you talk to me, then it's under the assumption that even my wife won't know. So that sometimes there is an advantage to talking to a rabbi. I have a friend who got divorced, and he was consulting with the rabbi all the time. And that rabbi's wife didn't even know he was divorced. A year after the divorce, she didn't know he was divorced. And he was at their home and everything. She didn't know, because he didn't tell her, because it's not her business. I can't tell you it's easy, but that's what we try to do. So that's where sometimes that could be an advantage, whereas if you speak to a friend, sometimes, very often, friends don't really keep quiet. I've heard of cases where a guy called up and he speaks to his friend and he doesn't know why he's on loudspeaker and the whole car is hearing, listening. I mean, these are things that happen. Yeah, big out. So even with friends, you have to wonder who you could trust. And with rabbis also, you have to know who you're talking to. And I can't say that every rabbi can be counted upon to maintain the confidence that you'd want him to. Some rabbis assume that if you're telling them something, you don't mind that he tells his wife. And you have to judge and speak to the rabbi. And sometimes you could tell him, you could ask him in advance, can what we discuss remain between me and you, and not go on to your wife or anyone else. But that's something to weigh, depending on the scenario. But it's always better to take counsel than to have the marriage destroyed, that's for sure. People sometimes are too scared of taking counsel. On the other hand, you have to know that with every counsel you take, the responsibility lies with you, not with the one giving you the counsel. His responsibility is to do his best to give you a good answer. But at the end of the day, it's your life, and you have to decide which advice to take. Yeah?
Is it okay, for example, if somebody comes to you as a rabbi and tells you something, and before I said it shall remain like this, but it's, for example, a very interesting story, and you just want to share the story with your wife, and you don't mention a name, and you don't give any advice that even when she meets this person, that she doesn't know who is speaking about, that you just tell general the story.
We don't know anything about you.
That's theoretically, that's okay. Practically, it doesn't really work. Because what happens is you don't remember what you tell your wife 3 weeks later. And this time you'll tell her this part of the story, and the next time you'll tell her another part of the story, and the third time he'll be by you at the Shabbos table and he'll mention a fourth part of the story which she'll connect with the first three, and she'll think he did that. That's not fair to do to the people. So I feel that the less said, better. That's my feeling. The Gemara says, Milta bechad, a word said is worth one. Shtikuta betrein, silence is worth two. Yeah. Now, halachos of lashon hara are the same to a wife as anyone else. You're not allowed to tell your wife anything that would constitute lashon hara, just like you're not allowed to tell anyone else. And if someone gives you confidence, then you're not supposed to tell your wife, no. But be smart about it. Don't tell her that you have a confidence. Because the second she knows you have a secret, so you don't need the Gemara, you could read Aesop's Fables, you could read all the folklore there is. One of the things that a woman can handle least is a secret. Second she knows there's a secret, she has to know. So if you want to have a secret, she shouldn't know you have a secret. And we have a whole class about secrets. So you know that. We have a...
I'm going to tell you about it.